for those of you that don't know me, and how many of you don't know me? Okay. I'm the guy, along with Brent Knox, who started all the Evergreens. How long ago has that been? This be 13 years this June, right? 13 years ago. And now I'm primarily up at the Rock on Saturday nights, with, which is primarily aiming at 18, 25-year-old college students and singles. And I also travel frequently to Honduras, for one, and then I do a number of conferences around the country with our association of churches called Great Commission Association of Churches. I have four children. My daughter just turned 21, Celeste. She still lives at home. My son Jeremy will be 20 in May. My daughter Jessica is 16. She's going to junior college, or actually college, in St. Paul, to St. Paul Technical College for cosmetology school. And my son Michael will be 12 Wednesday. So, I've been through some of the things that I think you're going through or that you're going to go through. And so, to the best of my ability, I'll try to answer any of your questions later on. Feel free to write them down. You can pass them forward. And if you're bold and brave and comfortable, you're more than welcome to just raise your hand later and ask it. And I'll try the best of my ability to answer your questions. I hardly even know where to begin tonight because there's so many things that we could talk about. I'm going to try to keep it focused this evening on your relationship with your teen, your child, communication, etc., etc. My wife Kathy couldn't come tonight. She's been having some back problems, flare-ups recently. So, but this may well have been married 22 years. So that tells a little bit about us. I'll be 45 this August. So that my wife just turned 44. So that's how old we are, and that's our kids. And my oldest are actually not in school now. They're done with college. They work full-time, have been for a couple years, and they've chosen to stay at home for now anyway. My son's will probably next October, unless they die, is getting engaged. And to the girl that was over here talking to you, she and Jeremy about a year ago or a year and a half ago, and then probably a year after that, or a year and a couple months to get married. My daughter Celeste is getting to know a young man from the Rock, and I wouldn't call it officially courting. They're good friends, but you know, we'll see what happens there. And she works full time at E.W. Blanche, and she and Gretchen actually work right across from each other. They get to work together. Gretchen's Jeremy's future fiance, so that's kind of cool how the Lord's worked all that out. So, first thing I want to say to all you young people tonight, I'm going to direct this towards the parents. But you young people will certainly be able to hear this and sort of hold them accountable. They may not want you to hold them accountable when I'm done sharing these things. But I think what I want to share with you tonight will at least give you a place to begin to help you know what's going to be necessary in order to effectively communicate with your child, with your teen. Why don't we ask the Lord to bless our time, and then we'll get into this tonight, okay? Father, I want to thank you so much for your word, for the guidance that your word gives us, and for each parent and each teenager here this evening. Lord, you have wonderful plans for each of them. It's true, Lord, we don't have to have these awful strained relationships. We really can have loving and encouraging relationships in our families. We ask you, God, that you would give us the desire and the willingness to change whatever is needed for that to happen. In Jesus' name, amen. First thing that I think is important to understand, especially for you young people that are here tonight, is that your mom and dad are not the enemy. But it's easy sometimes to perceive them as such. One, because our society tends to breed that mentality that mom and dad want to keep you from something. They don't want you to have fun. Mom and dad are dumb. Mom and dad don't have a clue. They don't have a clue to what life's about, what's going on with life. And even though I want you to know a couple things, most mom and dads obviously don't dress like I dress. And I do for a reason, okay? Because I'm on a specific mission and because I work with young people. But just because a mom and dad does not look like you does not mean they don't understand the things that you're going through. And that's very important to understand. What you're going through, by and large, your parents have gone through. Now, certainly it's a different world today than, for example, when we went to school.
there are different kinds of things that may happen in your school that maybe were never ever threatened to happen in my school. I never worried about going to my school, it was going to be blown up. Never would have crossed my mind. I never worried about getting killed. I didn't worry about getting beat up. I personally had an awful experience at school. I hated it. I didn't like school at all. And every day I went kind of scared, I went kind of nervous, and I was glad to finally be done. But when it comes to the pressures that you feel, when it comes to the changes that you're going through with your life, with your body, with the kind of things you think about, with the kind of things you're exposed to, they've been through it all. That's important to understand. It's also important to understand that they're not your enemy, but they're really your biggest fan. They want you to succeed in life. They would not be here tonight if they didn't want that. Every day they get up out of bed, and I can say this for them, I say this for myself, I live to make my kids successful. For me personally, I mean, I'll give you a few examples of this, and again, I don't compare this to any other parent. Each parent is unique, and each parent does things in their own way. But I regularly start my days at 5 in the morning, 5:15. Saturday, for example, I'm up at 5:15. Before it's 7 o'clock, before it's 6 o'clock, I've gotten the groceries, brought them home, and put them away all by myself. I start to vacuum, I start to clean, I take my kids' cars. On different mornings, I go every morning to pick up my wife and daughter's coffee. They like coffee. So I get it at Supermerica for free because they give it to me free. I don't know why, they just do. They've been doing it now for a year, so I keep taking it. And I buy my morning paper. And I regularly check either Jeremy's car or Celeste, and if one of them's low on gas, then I drive that one to the station since I'm going anyway, and I fill it up. And then at the end of the month, they just reimburse me. I just transfer money from their account into mine to cover it. But I do it. I go out and I check their oil for them. I'll take it. I live to make them successful. My wife is the same way. She lives to make those kids successful. Your parents are the same way. They do things for you that you don't even know they're doing for you. And someday, when all the responsibility of life falls on you, for some of you it might be at 18, for some of you might be at 20, for some of you might be at 22, it's going to dawn on you, holy smoke, there's a lot to life that I got all of a sudden keep track of. Your mom and dad's really, without even realizing it, are completely unpaid servants. And they get up every day, whether it's they both go to a job and come home, and on top of that job, try to take care of the house, try to provide for you the things that you wear or the things you need. They do it not to hold over your head, but they do it because they love you, because they care about you. there's a lot of things I'm sure all these parents would be the same. But I know my experience personally that I do without so that my kids can have things. I mean, I have been on a mission for the last 20 years to get my family and get myself and my wife in a financial situation where I have no debts, where all of my expenses are extremely manageable, so that as I get to these most productive years of my life, it would give me a greater cash flow. In other words, a lot of free income. And the reason I did that is so that I could, I drive, and I'm not saying you have to do this, but I'm just trying to give you context, okay, about a parent's love for their child. I drive an $800 Toyota Camry with 172,000 miles on it. It's paid for. I take good care of it. I'll probably drive it at 220,000 miles. My wife, of course, doesn't drive. She has a 93-year-old star van. I got it when it only had 19,000 miles on it, and I'll keep driving that till we need something. I think she wants a four-wheel drive next time, because she can't get in these smaller cars because of her back. So she only drives around now with just Micah usually. And so we got this big extended Aerostar van. So the next vehicle I'll get, I'll probably buy used and pay cash for it. The reason I do that is because then it leaves me free income that I have in a bank account, that instead of putting $300 a month into a car payment, and when you have a car payment, it means you have to fully insure a car if you have a loan on it, which for me would be another $180 a month or $150. I don't have any of that, and I can put it in a bank, get my son a guitar when he wants it, or an amplifier when he needs it, or other things that my children want. And the whole reason I've done that is so to be able to provide for my family the things that they might want or need at the particular time they need it. Now, I also don't go out of my way to spoil them or get them whatever. They have to work, and they know that. But that's a whole other topic for another day. I love my family, and I know that each one of your parents here tonight, they love you. You're the apple of their eye. They want nothing more than for you to succeed in life. And to be honest, they want nothing more than for you not to make the mistakes they made. All of us as parents here tonight unless some of you were raised much different than I, most of us are baby boomer parents. We made a lot of stupid mistakes in the 70s and in the 80s. Some of us maybe even as far back as the 60s. And so some of the reasons we're a little firm on things and we don't want you to go in certain areas is because we lived it and we paid the price for it, or many of our friends did. And so some parents are not as verbal as I am. I make my living being verbal. Remember that. Whenever you compare me to your parent, remember that I make my living talking. That's what I do. It's also a gift. I'm far more verbal than the typical father. And also, I think, often than the typical mother, which is very unusual. And so talking comes natural to me. Expressing myself comes natural to me. And as I've grown in the Lord, being open comes natural to me. Some parents will have a very difficult time telling you about the mistakes they made because it feels awkward to them. They feel silly. And I'm going to try to help them understand that it's very important that they learn to do that so that you understand why they tell you some of the things that they do. But I just wanted you to know that first of all, that your mother and father, they love you. They care about you. Now, they may not always show it in the ways that you wish. And parents, as we are prone to do, make mistakes. And sometimes we've said or done very hurtful things that are not easy to forget. And we need to make those things right to the best of our ability. And I'm going to talk a little bit tonight about hypocrisy. Hypocrisy will never get you anywhere with your children. It's nowhere. It's going to get you places you don't want to be. So you can write these things down if you want, or...
Well, that's probably covered up so far. I don't know. We'll see. Or, you know, they'll be on the tape. But I just have some miscellaneous things here tonight I want to communicate, and I call these prerequisites to good communication. Just like building a house, before you can even put the walls up or the plumbing or have all the cool things in your house, once it's built, you have to have a foundation. Whether it's you live in Texas or Florida where they have no basements, they have a foundation. They have a slab. They have plumbing running to it and electricity running to it. The same is true with a relationship with your children and with a family life. If you don't have these prerequisites, the places and things you want to do and the places you want to go, you're not going to be able to get there. So these are not necessarily in order of importance, but I've numbered them, and then you can think through the importance as we go along. The first one is respect. Your children must respect you. It's very, very important that they respect you. Now, there's a verse in James that says, "The one who looks intently at the perfect law, not having become a forgetful hearer but an effectual doer, this man will be blessed in what he does." But the one who's a forgetful hearer is like a person who looks in a mirror, they see something's wrong, but they walk away and they don't fix it and they become deceived. What deceived means, it means you believe something about yourself that isn't true. A lot of other people see it, but you don't see it. That's deceived. And I want to say that it's extremely important that you evaluate yourself carefully in the area of respect. You may think to yourself, oh, of course they ought to respect me. Your child, they may have a different perspective, or your mate. Your mate may have a different perspective. So I would have honest conversation with your spouse and ask them, "Do you think I'm worthy of respect? And if not, why?" Don't make it a big emotional, like you're going to fall apart. You know, your self-esteem cannot be wrapped up in, "Am I totally respectful?" But your self-esteem is wrapped up in God, and because it's wrapped up in God, now you can step back and you can honestly evaluate and ask your spouse, and I even ask my children from time to time to evaluate me. I'll sit down with them personally, and I'll say, "You know, sweetheart, if you could change anything about me, what would you change? What would you want?" I come across, I think, sometimes in a public way, in ways I don't necessarily intend to, but people have told me over the years, "Mark, you're kind of intimidating." My own children, I don't think, feel that way with me because they live with me 24/7, and even Gretchen, I've known for 2 years, she's not been afraid to get up in the middle of a conversation and go, "Mark, you know, that hurt my feelings," and say it. So I know that when people get close to me, and that we can have this kind of open dialogue, and I'm more than willing to say, "Oh, Gretchen, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I hurt your feelings. I didn't mean to do that. Would you forgive me?" And yeah, well, we take care of it, and we move on. But we don't fall apart, and we don't not speak for 5 days or whatever. We talk about it.
for some of us, talking about things I also realize is very hard. I take talking like breathing. It's second nature to me. I just do not know how not to talk about things. The only time I won't talk about things is if someone, particularly in relationships outside my family, just they don't want to. Then I'm not going to press the issue. You know, I'm not going to press the issue. But with my own family, I'll press the issue. So you've got to ask yourself, do the people I live with respect me? I've dealt with many parents who, their regular mode of communication with their child is to badger them or nag them or belittle them or yell at them or talk down to them. That will not garner you respect. Another thing, hypocrisy, living a duplicitous life, which means almost like your life's like live with a forked tongue. You speak one way, but you live another way. I've known so many parents like this over the years who will come to me too late. But they'll come in tears. Mark, I want things to be different in my family. And we just begin talking about their life. And I'll say, look, you've wanted your child to do this, but I've known you for 8 years. And you haven't been faithful in your walk with the Lord. You haven't been faithful in your own personal life. You've been compromising. What do you expect? That's what your child has seen, and that's laid the groundwork, and they're just mimicking what you've lived. You have given them permission by your lack of integrity to do the same. Now, of course, it's really painful because it's the child, and they're experimenting with things that may be huge and may have huge consequences, but you don't know now how to reel them in. It's pretty tough. When there's been a lack of integrity on your part, it's very difficult to rein your child in. And you can ask me questions about that later if you'd like. So they must genuinely respect you. You know, it's been interesting with Gretchen. Gretchen's really become like a part of our family. She's very dear to us. And Gretchen had a very different life before she started coming to the Rock. And she was a senior in high school when she came. It was, you know, the last 3 months of school. She had a very different life before she came to the Rock, and she lived very different. She did not have respect for authority. She did not respect her parents. And she since sought to repent of that and change. But there's been one major difference, and I almost wish this wasn't going to be on the tape, but the big difference is she respects me. And she has done the things that I have asked her to do. And the reason is because I recognize that when two young people are in love, one of the first great major temptations you have is with the physical relationship. And it just can't happen. And they know that. And Jeremy knows that. And she knows that. And we've had real heart-to-heart talks. I've had private heart-to-heart talks with her. And she's maintained the boundaries for 2 years, and there's two more to go. And even over time, they've gotten more adult-like in their actions, in their behavior. It's rare that they're out past 11 o'clock. It's rare that they're together more than three nights a week, even two nights a week. Friday's really their date night. She's going to school in the evening, work full-time during the day. And all the conversations, the bottom line reason that I have her ear is because she's seen me from the pulpit, she's tasted the product, in a sense, of my family, and I have her respect. If I did not, I wouldn't sleep at night. I can tell you that right now. I wouldn't sleep at night because I'd be really concerned about the pathway that she'd try to lead my son down. Because she's been down those roads before. And once you've been down them, it's real hard not to go down them again, especially when you're more in love than you've ever been in love in your whole entire life. We have a very open and honest relationship. There's nothing that I can't talk to her about and nothing that she can't talk to me about. She knows that. Number one reason is respect, and the second is trust. She knows she can trust me. And I have, in turn, invested trust in her. Not necessarily because she earned it, but because I knew that if we're going to build a long-term relationship, I have to offer trust as an olive branch. I have to offer, I'm going to trust you. And I've reminded her of that. You know, Gretchen, I've trusted you with the most important thing in my life. The most important thing in my life is my children. But for her, it would be my son. I don't have anything more important to me than my son or my daughters. You have him, okay? And you're going to have him, and you have his heart, and I'm trusting you to take care of it. Well, that doesn't mean, you know, she's going to hurt his feelings. I do the same. I don't hold her to a higher standard than I hold myself. But she knows that she can also trust me. And I remember a particular time when I first was getting to know her, she confided in me some things that had happened to her, things she did when she was in high school. And she knew I would not tell Jeremy, and I told her, I said, you know, Gretchen, I would never tell Jeremy. It's not my place to tell Jeremy, even though he's my son. I'm your pastor, and I understand that you needed to talk to me about those things, and it does not change at all how I think about you. I said, when you're comfortable, I think it's important you tell Jeremy. I can't tell you when that time is, but I think it's important that you tell him. And if I raised him right, and I think I did, I think you're going to find out that he deals with you in a very merciful way, and it won't change at all how he thinks about you. And I remember about 6 months after that time, they were on St. Thomas campus, and she confided in him as they were walking along the river road there, along the Mississippi River, near Summit Avenue, where St. Thomas is, sort of over there. She confided in him, and she was crying, and then they sat down on a bench, and he just told her, he said, Gretchen, you know, it just makes me love you more. Nothing's going to change the fact that I love you. Christ died for my sin, and he died for yours. And that's what I was taught. That's what the gospel means to us. You know, that was a stunning moment in her life. But she knew she could trust me with that information, and that it would stay with me, and that it was her responsibility when she would share with my son. Your children have to trust you. And they have to be able to trust you with their secrets. They have to be able to trust you with what's on their heart. An example I could give of this trust is that a few years ago, my daughter Jessica, I was hoping to bring her tonight, but she was with some friends, so I couldn't. So next week I'll try to bring her. But this was several years ago. You know, she was just, I think, 12, 13 years old. And one night, I don't know if I've told this before, but I sleep out on the couch because of my wife's back. And I probably get up at least 4 or 5 times a night to go to the restroom. I drink about 1.5 gallons of water a day. That's part of the reason why I get up to go to the restroom. And also, I'm just very fidgety. I'm very fidgety, so it keeps her awake. So, and I cough a lot because of the sinus problems that I have. So, anyway, I haven't done that forever, but probably the last 3 or 4 years I have. And so, she came out. It was about 10:30, and she came out, and she was crying. And so I just sat right up. I said, sweetheart, what's the matter? She said, Dad, I could tell she was embarrassed, and I just have these awful thoughts in my head, Dad, and I don't know where they're coming from. And these things I'm thinking. And I had an idea, but I kind of wanted to help her say some of it because I thought it would be good for her. And so we got into it a little bit, and some of it had to do with just sexuality and all these new things that were coming in her life. And so I just listened. She didn't get real graphic because I didn't want to embarrass her. And I said, you know what, Jesse? I said, sweetheart, I'm 41 years old. I said, I still have those kind of thoughts. I said, you know what? They don't go away. And I said, but especially now, you're just entering this new phase in your life, you're going to have those kind of thoughts. You're going to be thinking about boys. You're going to be thinking about kissing boys. You're going to be thinking about that kind of stuff. And then sometimes things that you didn't even deliberately think, they're just going to come into your head. And you're going to go, wow, where'd that come from? I said, you know, part of it's natural, and part of it's just Satan, who loves to try to make you feel crummy about yourself and destroy this gift that God gave us, and that's what he tries to do. You don't ever have to feel bad about it, but I want you to know you can come talk to me anytime, day or night, about it. The next 30 days, minimum, every night, she came out to the couch. I never talked down to her. I never said, you know, Jesse, geez, come on, get over this. I got to sleep. Never, not one time. This is very important, parents. Listen to me. If you don't listen when it's inconvenient, if your child does not know whenever it is you have time to listen, then you'll never have good communication with your child. Okay? Because generally, it's not convenient. And I'm going to talk about it a little bit later. Now, if you're in a business meeting or something's going on, then I can teach you how to handle that by saying to your son or daughter, you put the person on hold, say to your son or daughter, sweetheart, listen, I really want to listen. I need to take this call, and when I'm done with this call, I'll call you back. Unless you know it's a blood-curdling emergency. Then I tell the person on the phone, listen, something's come up. I've got an emergency. Can I take your number and call you back? Then I call them back. But your child needs to know that there's such trust with us that it's almost like God. Of course, we're not God. But God is available all the time. As their parent, they need to know, I can talk to you. Because I want you to understand something about children. Children, you're not children, but to us, you're our kids. We love you. They don't compartmentalize things like we do. We can think about something in the morning and think, you know, when I get home tonight, I need to talk to my wife about that. Or as a wife, you may think, I need to talk to my husband. Now, some wives are more emotional than us guys, and so they need to talk about it now. That's how children are. Not that that's a childish thing. They think with their emotions. They're emotional thinkers. And when it's time, when that emotion's there, it's ripe to talk. If you let the emotion pass and they have to suppress it or squelch it, you've missed a golden opportunity. And it may not come up again until it's too late to change the circumstances. Follow me? So it's very important. And with my daughter, let me just say, this was a strategic thing, and I'll tell you why. I have counseled, you have to realize that I'm not just a dad, I'm not just a pastor, but I've counseled thousands of people, thousands, in the last 15 years of being a pastor. Not all, but many women that I have counseled are totally, their lives are totally run by their emotions. Totally. They have no idea how to control them. A young lady who does not learn to control her emotions, because usually with women, and I praise God for this, God's given them the ability to feel things in a very real way. And this is where I'm odd. I am a center brain male. I am not, I think it's left brain that men are left brain. Is it left brain or right brain? Left, and women are right brain. I'm center brain. I've taken a test, in fact, to prove it. And so I am a very feeling and dramatic person, but I can also be logical and reasonable. I'm not saying that women can't, by the way. But gals just tend to think now, very colorful, very real. Their emotions just come flooding over them. What happens is they grow up, in many women, their fears control their life. Okay? They're afraid a lot. The Bible tells us not to live in fear. So when Jessie would go back to her room, I could tell if she didn't get a handle on this, if I don't help her win this battle, I'm going to have a messed up daughter on my hands in 3 years. I'm going to have a messed up 16-year-old. She has got to learn to control the thoughts that come into her mind and realize I can win. I can win. I can get on top of this. I remember when she was 13, Jeremy and Celeste were going to Normandale College then, but they had each other. They were more like twins than they were separate ages. And I remember I'd throw out to Jessie, now, Jessie, your time's coming. No, I'm not going. I'm not going to college. Dad, you're not going to send me to college. I'm not college material. And they're going to go with each other. I don't have anybody to go with. And Kathy sometimes will say, oh, Mark, privately, you know, I don't know if she can do that. And I just, well, I was planting seeds because absolutely she was going. You better believe it. The state's going to give it free. I'm going to try to take advantage of it. And I'm not going to let fear make me have to pay $7,000 because you were too chicken to go. Well, so let me explain. In this state, they have a program, just like public school, high school is free. If you'll take your last 2 years of high school at college, the state will transfer the money from the public high school and they'll send it to college instead, and it's free. Now, I'm not going to wait around for my kids to be able to take advantage of that. We're going to take advantage of it. So I did my own calling around and found out that St. Paul Technical College offers cosmetology school as one of their courses, and it's free. So I waited. I waited till Jessie had two jobs. She got out there in the world. She began to realize, you know what? I'm handling it. She'd come home and tell me all the crap that happened at work. I said, look at you, Jessie. You said, you realize what's going on, don't you? You're handling life. You're not letting those angry customers get you. You're not letting all the sexual garbage talk that went on at the first salon she worked at was unbelievable. Graphic and unbelievable all the time. And the stuff that those women told my daughter was like unconscionable. I couldn't believe it. But she said, you know, Dad, I just pity these women. They're so lost. What happened? Between 13 and 16, she grew up into a woman. That's what happened. She grew up and she kept walking with God and she kept going to the LT trainings and she kept seeking to follow the Lord. She grew up. Now I introduced, I said, sweetheart, I want you to go to cosmetology school over in St. Paul, downtown, by yourself. She's one of three white kids in the class. That's it. She's handling it. It's a cultural, ethnic experience for Jessica. She's doing great. Every morning she gets to ride with Jeremy. She's introduced to chemistry. She's never taken chemistry in her life. She had to do electricity. She's never done electricity in her life. She had to do something else. I forget the name of it. And she's making it. She's doing fine, and she's making friends. She's meeting people from Russia. And she, my daughter, if you meet her, she's got to have African-American blood in her somewhere. She just, if you ever hear her sing, you know she's got it in her. And so, like, 80% of the class is African-American. She's having a really good time. She's learning a lot. And she's not afraid anymore. If I had not listened when she came downstairs those nights, I promise you right now, she would not be going to college, because that's how afraid she'd be. She'd be afraid. And we cannot allow our children to give in to fear. So we have to learn to help them talk about it. You follow me? We got to talk about it. It's not wrong, young person, to talk about being afraid. There's a lot of scary things. I went to school afraid every day from the time I was in seventh grade on. I never had anybody talk about it. I felt very foolish about it, because my father, you understand my father. My father was he wasn't a professional boxer, but he was going to become one. And my father had 132 amateur fights, including Golden Glove fights. And he'd won 120 of them, and he'd knocked out 110 people. So it wasn't exactly cool to come home knowing that and say to my dad, I'm afraid. Because my dad would say, just knock him out. As somebody gives you a hassle mark, listen, if you don't stand up now, it'll follow you. They'll keep doing it. And, you know, I kind of knew that was true. But my father was a wonderful man, very charismatic man, very affectionate man, but he had a killer instinct. I did not, not then. I do now spiritually, but I still don't when it comes to if I really had to hurt somebody. I mean, if someone's attacking my family, I really would, I'd take a baseball bat to them. But my father, he'd do it just to be in a fight. And I wouldn't like that. And so it was very awkward for me going to school afraid, knowing I didn't have my father's killer instinct, but we couldn't talk about it. How do you say that to your dad? I think my dad even would have talked to me about it too, but I think I was afraid. My dad never talked to me about sex. Never did. And almost ruined my life. Sex almost ruined my life. Was almost my downfall. My downfall was not drugs or alcohol. My downfall was the very thing that parents have the hardest time talking to their children about, and that's sex. Drugs is nothing. Anybody can talk about drugs. And parents have to be convinced to talk about drugs. Anybody can talk about alcohol. What's really hard is talk to your kids about sex. Because it deals with emotions, it deals with things they know you're doing in the bedroom, but it's awkward to talk about because you're the parent. That's why it's so tough to talk about. But you got to talk about it. Because it's a natural part of life. It's this wonderful part of life. But I'll tell you right now, it's the number one thing ruining young people's lives in America. It's not drugs or alcohol. They pale in comparison to the number of lives being ruined by sex, by pornography, by what's going on the internet. And if you don't think, yeah, I won't have the internet. I don't have it in my home. Okay? I have email. And there is internet access that you can get. I have AOL, so with AOL, I don't have 5.0 version or 4.0 or 3.0, because it is unconscionable what you can type in and get on the internet for free. There are some that you can get. I think it's called integrity.net or something. A couple guys are telling me about it, and I don't have it that you can get that screens out most all those things. But if you don't think that it is an overwhelming temptation for a 13, 14, 15-year-old young man to know that 5,000 women will do whatever he wants and all he has to do is type in a word, you're crazy. You're just, I don't know what planet you're living on, but you don't understand the male species. And you don't understand what it's like to be alive in this day and age. It's very, very difficult. So you better get your head on straight. You better realize, you know what? These are issues I got to face. I got to learn. You know, the Britney Spears mentality. I mean, Britney's nothing more, if I can be blunt, and Madonna, than paid sluts. That's all they are, dancing, singing sluts. That's what they personify. That's the personal life they live. And that's what they project. And so, I mean, you know, you walk into some young men's dorm rooms, and you would not believe what's hanging on their walls. So, You can ignore me. You can pretend I'm telling you a lie. I'm just telling you, it's very important that you know what's going on in your family, and that you talk to your young men and women. Young women are pressured all the time by an invisible force called our culture. And you know, this will really feed for those of you who are feminists. I agree with certain tenets of feminism, and one of them is that the whole media culture is male-dominated. Don't you get it that the more we make you feel like you need to be toys for us, the more women we get to play with? And that's exactly what's going on. Trust me, Britney Spears has male handlers. Trust me, Madonna's had male handlers. And trust me, the fashion industry, not always, but primarily, is male-driven. They want you to look sexual. They want you to feel that you need to be sensual, because the more you feel that way, that means the more women they can have sex with. And as that standard has continued in this society, it pervasively affects younger and younger and younger women. And the statistics for teens having sex at 13, 14, 15 years old, it's scary. It's really scary. So you've got young girls that are going to school, they go, "Golly, I want to fit in." Who doesn't want to fit in? Well, they know that if you're going to fit in, you have to look a certain way. You have to sort of act a certain way. And sometimes they know how to be very duplicitous. They can be one way with you, and they get around these guys at school, and they'd be exceedingly flirtatious. They can just turn it on and turn it off, just like that. They learn to do that. Young men, I know the conversations they talk about, the kind of things they say about women, the kind of things that get commented about, and unless your young son that you're raising has the guts to say to the guys, "You know, guys, I don't want to hear that." My son, when he was 15 years old, I'll give you an example, was going to Normandale College. And Jeremy's not a real big guy. I mean, you know, he's a little bit bigger than I am, but he wasn't at the time. He was sitting at a table with two girls from Turkey. And this guy comes up, sort of this gangster sort of individual. And he comes up and he starts talking real, real filthy to these girls. Making comments about their body, making comments about things he wants to do with them. So Jeremy just looked up, and he knew this guy, he had a class with him, and he said, "Hey, you know," I forget what his name was, it was Thomas or it was Robert or whatever his name was. He said, "Listen, please don't talk to these girls like that. Just don't talk. What the blankety blank you mother effing blankety blank, who the blankety blank you think you are?" And he went on and talked to him. So Jeremy stood up, and he said, "I'm asking you, do not talk to these girls like that. Do not disrespect them like that." Well, a couple of these other guys that were his friends knew that Jeremy has his second degree black belt in karate, which really wasn't the real issue for Jeremy, because he really probably wouldn't have fought the guy. He probably would have just ducked out of the way or done whatever he needed to do to avoid the fight. But the point was, he had the guts in the middle of this cafeteria to stand up and say, "Do not talk to these women like that." Well, one of these big guys who was his friend, as he went to go, Jeremy just picked him up and drug him out of the room and they left. And the next day I told Jeremy, go to school, have a conversation with him, let him know that you meant no disrespect to him, because kids like this will show up the next day with a gun and kill you. I don't want that to happen to you. So I want you to wait outside the class and talk to him. He did. The guy gave him a hug and said, "Hey, you know what? I was out of line." Now that's amazing. In this day and age, that's amazing. But moms and dads, you know, the greatest mistake you can be is to be naive. Don't be naive. Don't let your kid make you think they don't live in the world that I'm telling you. Because I see it every day. I hear it go on. I have ears. I have little birds. I have little spies, if you want to call it that, that are out there among. And even sometimes the things that get talked about among youth members. My daughter will come home and tell me something. You know what I'll say? I'll say, "Jesse, you get on the phone and you call up that friend, and it's your responsibility to confront that in that individual. You let them know you love them. You let them know they need help and they need to talk to their parent about that situation, or they're going to get in a lot of trouble." So I try to also help my children take that kind of initiative. Number 3, your kids have to know and believe that you care. And they have to know and believe that you care about them. They have to feel that. Write this down. Real communication does not occur until people feel safe. Real communication does not occur until people feel safe. Your children have to feel safe in their relationship with you. If you're a reactionary, it takes a lot of self-control when your child tells you they've made a mistake that you hope they'd never make. You're going to have to stay in control. There can be tears. It may hurt. But if you lay into them and go off on them without some restraint, then you've created not a safe environment, but you've created a fearful environment, and the chances are they may never talk to you again about something. This would also apply, let's say, if it's personal. Maybe they want to talk to you about something that's really bothering them about you. If you get real defensive and you get real reactionary, instead of just listen, consider it. It may not all be true, but there may be a grain of salt there of truth that you need to know. If you shut them down, a kid won't give you too many more chances. Usually once they're shut down, they stay shut down. And they may not ever talk to you again. 4, you must mean your word and keep your word. So, if you lay down a rule, then you better mean the rule, and you better stand up behind the rule, and make the rule stick. If you're always bending the rule, then you send the message, well, I don't really mean what I say. It can always change. It can always evolve. You also need to be a person who keeps their word. If you make a promise to your child, keep that promise. Keep that promise. The Bible says in Psalms that a righteous person will keep their promise even to their own detriment, even if it means you're going to be hurt. I know one time, for example, I had a situation. My wife and I had never been on a trip together. And we had a chance, it was on our 20th anniversary, to go free. Someone wanted to give me a trip to the Virgin Islands. Plane tickets, the motel, everything. And my wife loves the sun. I love the sun. I wanted to go really, really bad. The only time we could go was on the same weekend that I promised to do a couples conference. Now, actually, I probably could have got out of the couples conference. But, you know, it was close. They would have had to scramble for a speaker. I didn't. And one of the reasons I didn't, and it was hard for my wife. She did understand, but it was still hard. Because she really would have liked to have done it, I would have liked to have done it. It's because I gave my word, and I wanted to even set an example to my own children. I could have benefited by changing my word, but I didn't. And I never did get the free trip because that was the only time I could get it. It's very important to keep your word to your children. If for some reason there's extenuating circumstances that you did not know about that alter the situation, it's very important that you explain that to them and help them understand why. And then reschedule whatever that was you were going to do. 5, they must know and believe that they can be honest with you. I kind of already said that, but put it down as a point. They have to know they can be honest with you. You know, if there's something they don't like, you know, let me give you an example. When I was a kid, like, I loved my mom. I would have died for my mom. The first job I ever had, I was 11 years old, and the first thing I ever bought with $40 was an etched glass vase for my mom. I didn't buy anything for me. I love my mom. And I love her to this day. I try to send her money on a monthly basis to help her out. She's very dear to me. But one thing I was always very frightened of by the time I was in sixth grade was my mom would show up at school. And you know why? Because I was ashamed of my mom. Do you know why? Because the way my mom dressed. My mom just would not put on a pair of jeans. If her life depended on it, she would not wear jeans. She was so uncool. Now, I never said that to my mom. But you know, part of me looks back, kind of wished, you know, Mom, I would love to show you off. You just were so weird. You know, you were just, and I didn't expect her to wear bell bottoms, you know, just a pair of jeans, you know. I mean, I was wearing bell bottoms. She wasn't exactly going to be able to fit in the kind of bell bottoms I wore, but it was just like, Mom, you look like you come from the 50s, and it's 1968, you know, and it's now it's 1970. And Now my mom's 64 and she wears jeans. Go figure. You know, go figure, right? I mean, but we're all gone now. So it doesn't really matter now. But it mattered then. There were other things. You know, I wished I could have told my mom, kind of wished I would have had the guts to talk to my mom about some of the things I did when I was in high school, but my mom's a very tender person. She's very emotional. And what I knew is it would have broken her heart. I knew that it would have crushed her. Instead of being able to absorb it like Christ and say, well, you know, Mark, I love you. I'm disappointed that you made that mistake, but I love you, and let's keep talking about it. My mom could not handle heavy things, and I saw that in other situations. Like if my dad would want to have conversations or certain information, my mom would almost plug her ears like, oh, I just can't hear that. Certain stories that would happen on the news, my mom just couldn't handle them. So I knew that. It's very important that your children can be honest with them. And number six is very important that you're honest with them. You know, an example might be why you and your husband were divorced, if you are divorced, or you and your wife. I think it's important if an affair was involved that the child knows. Some people have said to me, and again, I've counseled many situations like this, in case you're thinking Mark's just airing his opinion. I mean, I've had to do these things in real life, help people in real life. You obviously want your child, for example, say you're the wife, you want the child to have a good relationship with his father to the best of his ability. He will not have a good relationship with the father if his relationship is based on a lie, on a misrepresentation or a misperception of what the man really did. So if he cheated on you, if he had an affair with the young lady at work, and that's why your marriage is ending, it's important to take him aside and let him know that. Now, you certainly want to do it, and of course, moms, if you're in the situation, you'd have to do this when you're comfortable and once you've grieved and dealt with yourself, because you don't want to do it with venom. You don't want to do it like the dirty, filthy, scumbag dog ruined our lives, blah, 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 and even though that may be exactly what he is. And I know, you know, I went through this, only my father didn't leave for another woman, but he abandoned the family, and eventually, don't lie. Don't lie. Tell them what's going on. If, for example, things are a little rough right now around the home, children can pick up on that. Maybe they even ask you, you and Dad doing all right? Or Dad, you and Mom doing all right? You know, it's fine to sit them down and say, sweetheart, you know what? First of all, I want you to know, I love your mom. I love your mom. We're going through a rough time right now. Not going to leave your mom. But yeah, things are a little tough right now. We're missing each other. We're not seeing things eye to eye right now. Do pray for us, okay? But again, I want to assure you, I'm not going to take off, because you don't want a child's world to be unsettled, okay? Now, if you're in a situation where a divorce is inevitable, then get some help. Call one of the pastors. We'd be glad to talk you through even some ideas of how to deal with that with your children, because you want to try to help them. But anyway, my whole point here is be honest. With them. That doesn't mean you share every private thought. That doesn't mean, you know, you talk about every single thing. But I'm just saying you learn to be honest and be open with your children. My children, for example, several years ago, I had an extraordinarily difficult thing happen to me that was none of my doing. There was nothing I could do to stop it, nothing I could do to control it once it was done. If anything almost crushed me, that almost crushed me. It was on my 40th birthday. It was 1 week after my 40th birthday. And I went around the house for 3 weeks in tears. I didn't try to hide it from anybody. I was devastated. I was absolutely devastated. I thought about quitting. I thought about moving. I thought about, frankly, let the world go to hell in a handbasket. Let them all go to hell. I don't give a blank anymore. And I was just crushed. And I took out my oldest Bible. I actually took out my guitar and started playing again. I sang every song that I knew. I did every single thing I knew to do to encourage myself and keep myself from going really into a pit of tremendous discouragement and cynicism and anger and rage at what had happened. There were even times I asked my children to in the living room to gather around and pray together. And as we prayed, There was tears in every one of our eyes. They realized Dad was going, this was really tough. I've never lied to my children. The Christian life and ministry, being a pastor, is the toughest job in the world. People will hate you for no reason. They will say some of the most mean, degrading, unfounded things you can possibly imagine. And if you want to grow up and serve the Lord, and each of them have expressed that to me over the years, and I'm not going to hold them to that. That's between them and God. But I will try to help them succeed in every endeavor. I've told them, I just want you to know it's the most painful thing in the world. It's the most rewarding. I wouldn't trade it. But if you're going to serve and follow God, it costs you. And if they hated Christ, I want you to know they're going to be people who hate you. People who you loved, and each of my children have gone through that individually with friends. They have been stabbed in the back, and the knife was turned. They have been betrayed, not by all their friends, but in certain situations. And they've learned, and I've been there to console them each and say, so is the Lord. Now you go love your friend, you go pray for your friend, and you do good to the very person who hurt you. I can say that with authority, because they've seen me do it, and they know it's cost me. But I never try to pretend like, oh no, I'm fine. Everything's great. Everything's great. It's very important that your children understand that, see, because moms and dads, you don't want to give them a false impression of Christianity. You don't want them to think that Jesus is smile, smile, smile. Happy, happy, happy. We'll be happy. Everything's happy. Happy, happy, happy. There's a lot of joy in my life. There's certainly a lot of happiness, and I try every day to be thankful and to be joyful. But there are great trials, and there at times are great difficulties. So you want to make sure that your children have an accurate representation of what Christianity is, because as a pastor, let me tell you, the scariest thing in my life is that my children would grow up to despise the God that I love, which, of course, as you know, happens to a lot of pastors' kids. So all of these things were very important to me. And number seven, openness begets openness. They're not going to be open with you if you're not open with them. Number eight, and this is very important, you must take time and make time to be with your children. Write this down. It takes quantity to get quality. Now, I want to share with you that I've been under a great advantage for raising my children. I want to give you two primary reasons why. I'm not saying you need to do these things, but I do want you to understand why I'm able to get the time that I have. Number one, we homeschool our children. And so from the time my children were little up until, for Jesse at 16, they were always in our home. Always. Number two, since Jesse was 3, I've worked out of the home. And all of us as pastors have actually done that deliberately. There's 3 primary reasons we've done it as pastors that we all office out of our home. Number one, we save the church lots of money because we don't pay for expensive offices. And the church does not pay us for rent of our, you know, like our office at our home. Okay? We offer that free. Number two, keeps us close to our wives. We do not want any of our husbands or our pastors getting trapped into an immoral situation because they've been ministering so much they've been away from their wife. Number three, it's kept us close to our kids. And by the way, our job's the only job in the world where there's 2 requirements for that job, and if we ever fail in them, we can be fired. A pastor's children must obey him with respect and be children who believe. They can't be given to the charge of being wild and disobedient, and we have to have a good relationship with our wife. If we don't, we lose our job. Does that make sense to you all? You follow me? So for us, those are the reasons why. So for me, I have an office out in a garage. But, I regularly am interacting with my family. My 2 oldest have cell phones. I can call them anytime. I'm in contact with them. In fact, even at their jobs, I call them a couple times a day just to encourage them. Maybe a 3-minute call. How are you? I was thinking of you today. How's it going? Work hard. Apply yourself. Just a touch. Whether it's Micah or Jesse, when my kids were little, I would date them. We'd go out on dates. Mike and I recently went to see Vertical Limits. We liked it. It's kind of gory. You might not like it, but, you know, my kids have seen Braveheart. So you have to decide what your boundaries are for movies. But anyway, we like movies. We go out to eat. Occasionally, I've come home from the Rock, picked Micah up, and take him with me to a restaurant to hang out with a bunch of young people because it raises Micah's level of maturity, and he can dialogue with them. He's not like a little child genius, but he hangs and he's personable, and it's good for him. I don't do it often, but I do it once in a while. It's very important that your children know you have time for them. You have time for their events. You have time for them as a person. You have time to hang out and just sit with them, whatever. I'm going to open up for questions. I have other things, but I want to make sure there's at least a little time for questions. Anybody have any questions about anything? Yeah, a young person or parent? Yes, Don.
Do you ever get any, hear the kids tell you that all they wanted was a yes or no answer, they didn't want 20 minutes? I'm notorious for giving, you know, if they ask me something, I give them a yes or no, and then I tell them why, and then her response is, I just wanted a yes or no.
Well, I think there's a time to just say yes, or it's time to say no, but also I think there's a time to explain why. In fact, I didn't mean to skip over that one, but I may have put it on my second page. Explain the whys and help them understand why you have a certain perspective. Use word pictures, use analogies. I don't have time to describe that tonight. I do think there's times, very appropriately, to explain why you're sharing what you're sharing, especially if it perplexes them. But if it doesn't perplex them, and all they wanted was the yes or no, yeah. Don't pontificate if you don't need to. Don't preach if you don't need to. But there's a time, definitely, to go into a longer explanation to help this young person understand the perspective. One thing that young people, and I find, in fact, many, many older people do not see, is they don't understand the big picture. I call it the macro view of life. They see the micro view of life. Always remember that everything that you want to try to do with your life should fit into a bigger picture. If it doesn't, don't do it. If it doesn't fit in with your life agenda, if it doesn't fit in with where you're headed with your life, if it doesn't make sense to the big picture, if it has ramifications that you have not thought through, it's always important to think through, okay, I want to do this, but what will be the consequences if I do it? Now, you know, if you want to go roller skating with friends, and you know, that may not have ramifications you need to sit through and think about. But there may be other decisions. For example, let me give an example. You know what mini scooters are? Mini scooters. They are very cool. I don't rollerblade. I mountain bike, but I can't skateboard. But I love the mini scooter. In fact, I surprised one for Micah last year. And we moved. I bought, first time we've ever owned a house. I bought a little house in Eagan. It's a twin home, so it's like half a house. They have half. We have half. And our driveway is a hill. So you're thinking, you know, what good's a hill? You can't really have a basketball on it. You can't. So one day I'm in the store, and Mike had mentioned these mini scooters. And I thought, I'm going to buy him one. Well, way cool, because on our hill, we do these competitions. We just get one push, and then we see what things we can do by going down and come up the hill and back and down. And well, anyway, it's a long story. I love this thing. The first day we got it, we spent 6 hours on it together. I mean, it was so cool. I don't know if I'll bring in the next week. I can't do trick things so much, but at least I can stay on it. So, after the first day, I told Micah, and I knew this wasn't going to go over real big. I said, Micah, and I got him this very cool mountain bike helmet. It's the really expensive kind with the visor on it. It says Mongoose on it. I said, Micah, you know, all these friends, little friends in the neighborhood, they had him. I said, Micah, you got to wear your helmet when you're on the scooter. I got to wear the helmet? It looks stupid. I said, yeah, I hate them too, because I do. But after what happened to Christopher Reeves, I never go on my bike without a helmet. And it also, I slowed down. I don't want to end up in a wheelchair the rest of my life. So I tell him those kind of things. I said, Micah, I said, sweetheart, I love you, but I want to tell you something about your body. The one thing that won't heal very well if you hurt it's your brain. If you hit your head hard, and it's one of the biggest injuries that they see on this and mountain bikes, there's nothing I can do to fix you. Do you understand that? So we had this long talk. Yeah. So one day, he goes off. This is like 3 days later. He goes off down the road to this church parking lot, which is, Micah's 11. So this is the first time we've lived in a neighborhood like this. An old Shakopee right by the Mall of America. The kids never went anywhere. Never rode around the block, nothing. So Micah comes home later that day. He goes, Dad, he says, I got to tell you something. I said, what? He goes, well, Dad, he said, you know, I was going on my scooter, and I'm pushing, and there was a crack in the concrete. My little wheel, they're only little wheels, caught in the crack, bam! I went down and smacked my head, forehead first, right on the concrete, Dad. Just like you said might happen to me. He said, you know what, I have my helmet on, Dad. And if I didn't have my helmet on, I think I'd be in the hospital. every time I remind him of that. I said, you taught yourself a valuable lesson, son. It's not so much that I'm trying to be right. It's that I just know things. Just like that, you can be on the ground. And Mike is very coordinated. You can be coordinated as all get out. You can be on that ground so fast it will make your head spin. And I have friends today that are evergreen. They're in wheelchairs because they didn't listen. They didn't listen. And if they'd have listened, they wouldn't be in them right now. So I try to get their attention, but anyway. Other questions? Yes? Yes. Well, they were thoughts. Sometimes they were weird dreams that, of course, you have no control over. She's going, why am I having these dreams? Okay, let me explain why. She began to obsess over it. See, she began to go like, what's wrong with me? This is weird. And then she'd get real emotional. And I could tell Jesse has that. Jesse's extremely creative. Of all my children, except maybe Jeremy, but because she's a female, the way she's wired, she's extremely feeling-oriented, extremely expressive. And if she does not get control of that, obsessive, then as time goes on, she's going to be afraid of this, she's going to worry about that, she's going to be this, I'm weird. She starts internalizing it all. I'm weird. What's wrong with me? I'm weird. That's what I meant. And I knew, I could see, because I've dealt with people before, that if she does not overcome this and get victory in it, and believe she can get victory in it, this will be the beginning of a losing war. And it could lead to other things. Like, well, I couldn't beat that, and well, I can't beat this either. So as time went on, she quit coming out, but I would also ask. Maybe a month or two would go by and I'd say, sweetheart, how's it going? How's it going with your thoughts? How's it going with your worries? And, good, Dad, good. You know, I've been memorizing this verse. I feel stronger. And so that's been lived out. They weren't always, sexual in nature. Sometimes they were just scary, freaky things. Sometimes they were just dreams, where in the world did that come from? Why am I having this? I want them to go away. Like how many of us have thought, I want these to go away? I don't want these to be here. Well, that's what Paul says when he says we groan. All of us groan, waiting for God to come and take us and get us out of this cesspool. One day that'll happen. So, yeah. Yeah, a killer spiritual instinct. By hating enough. When you see the bumper sticker that says hate is not a family value, that's actually a lie. That's unbiblical. Hate is a biblical value. Do you know what 1 Corinthians 13 says in the very context of love? Love is patient, love is kind, love hates what is evil but rejoices with the truth. That's what the King James Version says. So my point is that by killer spiritual instinct, I mean I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to quit. I mean, I will fight the devil tooth and nail. I will fight my flesh. There have been times emotionally that I have wanted to walk out of my marriage. I just like to blank with it. I am so blankety blank, sick and tired of this crap. And I'll be in my office and I mean, I kill myself. That's what I mean. I mean, my killer instinct is directed at Mark's flesh. And I am not, my flesh not going to win. It's not going to, if I have to kill it, it's not going to win. If I have to die to myself some more, I will die to myself some more. That's what I mean by a killer instinct. And by a tenaciousness that says, I am going to go after God, and I want to advise all of you to get the book, The Prayer of Jabez. Get that book. Get it immediately this week. It's $9.99. It's only 80 pages long. But often people ask me, Mark, why would you say your life's the way it is? That book will explain it. That prayer, the concept of that book, has been what I've been praying for the last 25 years of my life. It's called The Prayer of Jabez. It's by Dr. Bruce Wilkinson. And it is a tremendous book, and that book can change your life. So when I said I have a killer instinct, some people have a killer instinct like with basketball, with sports, which that's fine. What I'm saying is I have a killer instinct with my spiritual life. I am going to win. I am going to be what God wants me to be. And if I have to die to every fiber of my emotional being to force my flesh to do what it doesn't want to do, I'll starve it. I'll kill it if I have to kill it. I will deny it. And so even in my own life, I seek to practice. As I've continued growing my spiritual life, and remember, you know, I've been following the Lord longer than many of you have been alive. But for 25 years of my life, I've been following Christ. Okay? Now, denying myself, whether it's with food, I have a very regimented life. I did not have a very regimented life 18 years ago. I get up at a certain time every day. Every day. I'm not saying it's wrong to sleep in. It's not. Each person has to set their own boundaries. I do not, because it's worked best for my physiology to stay at a 5 to 5:30 schedule every day, 7 days a week. I go to bed basically at the same time every night. I eat basically the same thing every day for breakfast. I do basically the same workout 6 times a week. And all of it has one goal in mind, to make my flesh do what I want it to do. What does Paul tell us? I buffet my body, which means I beat my body and I make it my slave. I make it do what God wants it to do, and actually what I really want to do, but the flesh is always fighting me to do it. So if I don't teach that to my children, that's what I meant with Jesse. If Jesse doesn't learn, hey, first I don't need to get discouraged because my flesh is icky and makes me think weird things. Don't get bent out of shape about it. I don't even worry about it. Thoughts like that come to my mind, move on. Move on. But when you're young, you take it really personal. You think, and you're a young Christian, you think, God, what's going on with me? I'm weird. I'm sick. Something's wrong with me. No, you're a human being, and human beings are sick. The heart is desperately sick. Who can know it? When you understand that, it's liberating. You no longer fight it. You can say, I'm a sick person. My heart is, but not the real me. The new me is a new person. And I love God, and I want to do what's right. And by George, I'm going to do what's right. So, discipline is extremely important. But understand that I don't expect even my own children to be at the level of discipline that I'm at, because I'm almost 45 and I've been following the Lord 25 years. But I do seek to exemplify what they in time will need to become. And I've sought to introduce them to incremental levels of discipline in their own life. Like one of the things I have to fight Jessie on, and she'd be the first one to admit this. Some of you wonder, do I ever have to fight with my children? I do, with her working out. I force her to do Tai Bo. She has her second degree black belt. It will keep her in karate shape. She doesn't do other activities. So on Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays, and sometimes she comes home from school. She's brain dead. I know that. She's brain fried. She's tired. I know that. So I let her take a nap, and I say, you get down and do Tai Bo. I don't want to do that. Do it. I don't want to do it. I want you to get down and do it. Do it now. Get your clothes on and do the first Tai Bo tape. And then I want you to come up and do the total gym for 15 minutes. Well, she's supposed to do that on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Now, it doesn't always work. It doesn't always fit the schedule, but I'm serious about that. Because why? I wanted to understand that your health is important, Jesse. Your health. This isn't so much about your body as it is a long-term habit of your lungs, your heart, your bones, your body, your muscularity, your physicality, and your overall strength. But it's also about making your body do what it doesn't want to do. Now, do you need to do that? No. I'm not saying you need to do that, and some of you may think I'm a vulgar pig and I shouldn't do it. That's okay. You can think that. You know, I'm not going to hate you for that. Jeremy and Celeste are on their own at this point, but I certainly did regularly prod Celeste to get into a routine because she'd let it go for a long time. She joined a club, and she tries to go 5 times a week, 4 or 5 times. But I'm regularly reminding them, just like I regularly remind them to floss. If you want to put thousands of dollars in your mouth like I did, fine. But it's painful, and there's a lot better things to do with the money. Floss. So, you know, I got them started that habit. But sometimes you have to bring that to bear on your family. Am I making sense? That's what I mean by tenacious killer instinct. But you have to exemplify that yourself before you can seek to impose that on others or lead them in that. Yes, Marie? Sure. Sure. Well, sometimes it's because of me. Sometimes we like to think, well, the kid's dense, but sometimes it's not that. Sometimes I'm up, I love solving problems, especially life problems. And so I think to myself, if I could communicate this better, they'd get it. That's usually the first thing I think. So I think, okay, I got to find another way around the wall. You put up this wall, okay, I got to find another way. What's another word picture I can give you that will make this make sense? And part of that's just my training being a pastor. My greatest desire is to help people understand truth. If they can understand truth, if I can get it from their heart, their head to their heart, so they understand it, then light bulbs start to go on. So I work very hard to do that with my children. Sometimes it's because they don't have a heart for truth. That's true. But sometimes it's just because, you know, I got to get this across better. Sometimes they're just not at the age where they can even comprehend what I'm trying to tell them. So there's sometimes a lot of factors. Sometimes you just look them in the eye and say, you know what, sweetheart, I love you. I did the best I could to explain this. The bottom line is I'm pulling rank. I'm your mom. You're not doing it. End of story. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to do that all the time. Yes, sir. Yes.
I have four boys. You had a couple boys.
Yes.
Do those opportunities present themselves with the boys?
Yes.
Much, or did you have to create them?
I had to create them. Jessie's, you have to know Jessie. She's very unique. She's very smiley, very happy, very, very, very people-oriented, and very open. Jeremy, on the other hand, when he was young, even to this day, although Gretchen in his life, because she'll tell him, Jeremy, this really bothers me, and in our long-term relationship, I want you to overcome this. I want you to talk to me. I don't want to feel like I'm pulling teeth. With Jeremy, you could feel like I was pulling teeth. There were times, this is no lie, I was sat on the edge of his bed for an hour, repeatedly asking him, son, what's bothering you? Sweetheart, what's the matter? And there was times, and Jeremy's pretty verbal too, he would stammer trying to say what he wanted to say, and it would get caught, and he would explain it to me. Finally, when he just gets caught right here. And so, being the dad, and, you know, the father knows best kind of thing all the time, you know, not that we do always know best, by the way, I would start guessing, and usually I was pretty close to the mark, and so I would say, is this kind of what you're feeling, Jeremy? Is this, and he said, because I knew he was kind of embarrassed sometimes to say what was going on. It's not easy to say certain things. And so I just kept at him. And that's what I mean by time. If I had not taken the time, if I'd have just gone, well, crap, you know, I don't have an hour here, son. You know, I have all night to just sit around here till you decide you want to tell me what's going on. So tell me now. You know, that's not going to get you anywhere. And there were times, too, that I said, you know, Jeremy, I want you to know I love you, son. I'm going to go upstairs for a while. If you want to talk, you know, I'll be there. But I didn't do that often. And now as he's gotten older, you know, he's learned to become more open. And a lot of men, by the way, this is a classic complaint of the female species, is they won't talk. They won't express what's going on. We can solve any problem if you'll talk. Just talk to me. Just tell, I don't care if it hurts me. I was a little scared. I don't care. You hurt me. I'm a big guy. Okay. And I mean, I've told that to Kathy. I've said, you say whatever you want. Sometimes, let me share this with you, parents, a secret to the modern age. Email. If you're having trouble with your teen and they don't know exactly what to say to you, start talking with them online. Write them an email. Let them write you back. I have advised some families in this, and it's transformed their communication. One family, in fact, just 3 days ago, a young woman had the best conversation she's ever had with her mother because for the last week and a half, she's written three emails. The mother usually yells and screams. It's the only way she communicates with this child. This child is 19. I was stunned. She forwarded me the emails that the mother had written and that she had written to the mother. They were coherent. They were well thought out. They were rational. They were logical. I couldn't believe it was coming from the same person. I have had people say things to me now, and since emails, I've got an email address, that they never come up to me and say publicly, like, I didn't really like your message. I didn't like this. I didn't like that. People get real brave when they don't have to look you in the eye. That's okay with me. And every person I've written back and said, the first phrase is, dear so-and-so, thank you for your heartfelt and honest email. I appreciated it. And usually I don't defend unless they're asking for an explanation. I just say, you know what? Please pray for me that I would continue to grow and be a more effective communicator. Sincerely, Mark. My goal isn't to fight. But if we can talk, we can solve anything. If we'll talk. If we don't talk, then we can't make any headway. Understand? So I tell each of my children, I remember one time Celeste came to me, and this was probably 3 years ago, and I told my kids, if there's ever anything that's bothering you, just let me know. Celeste is the most straightforward of all my children. She's far more like I am, and she's very choleric. She came to me one day, but she still loves me. You know, as you kind of have almost a parent worship sometimes, you know, of your parents. Plus, I'm her pastor, so it's a double whammy. She came to me one day, and she doesn't usually get super emotional. She kind of got teared up, and she said, "Dad, I just got to tell you, you just have too many opinions, man. I mean, you got an opinion about everything I wear every day." And she was right. I always do. I can't stand some of the new styles. I mean, I'll be the first one to admit it. I don't mind being stylish. But who ever thought about bringing bell bottoms back ought to be shot. I mean, I just... See the problem is, and again, you'll see how opinionated I am. Bell bottoms look fine on a certain body style. On others, they look pathetic. I just can't get that through to certain people in my life. And so she told me that, you know, it really got to my heart. I realized, I said, you know what, sweetheart? You're right. I probably just seem like a pain in the batoot, as Chris Farley would say, you know, and I probably, you know, have made life pretty miserable. I'm sorry. And you know what? I really work on shutting my mouth. And you know what? I'm not, Celeste, ashamed of you. It's not like you're immodest or something like that. I just kind of like the styles, you know, that you were wearing about a year ago, and which still happen to be out there at certain places. There's almost anything, you know, goes these days. Just she prefers these, and my other daughter prefers that. And, you know, my wife doesn't like her bangs hanging on her forehead. You know, that Jessie's creative. She's going to do that stuff. It's going to happen. You know, parents, we have to deal with it. Does that make sense? Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
So, in the communication process, what role did your wife play? Were you both kind of, you know, really push the issue with the kids? I guess I have to be a poor boy too.
Right. Right.
And maybe saying that, that you want to verbalize as much. How much of, so that's one thing. And then how much of your talk is of substance versus how much is just kind of keeping the same way?
Well, you always got to have warm up conversation, you know, to get deep. You gotta laugh together. You gotta sometimes cry together. You gotta watch funny movies together. It's amazing. You know, one time, I went with my son, my oldest son. We went to the mall. So let's go to the mall, hang out. Let's walk around. We like cool stuff. He doesn't like some of the clothes I wear, but some he has to borrow, and some of the stuff he wears I don't exactly like either. But you know. Since he started going with Gretchen, you know, he's buying that Banana Republic stuff, which little Micah's not afraid to say it. One day at the table, he goes, "You know, Jeremy, you're always wearing those gay clothes." You know what I mean? And that, by the way, you're always wearing those gay clothes. Because, see, Banana Republic primarily, I don't know if you know this or not, but they primarily cater to that, and I know that because I've read articles by the CEO of the company. But Gretchen worked at Banana Republic, and not all the clothes looked that way, but, you know, it was more of that, the tight sweaters and the certain kind of pants. It's like, oh, geez, you know. So, you know, I'm more into the, like, the tough kind of Abercrombie or, like, you know, this or, you know. But Jeremy used to be, but he's not now, you know. Well, we'll see what happens 5 years from now. Who knows? So one day we're hanging out at the mall. We're just walking. And as we're walking and he's not looking me eye to eye, next thing I know, all this stuff just comes out. All this talk, life, et cetera. Go, wow, this is cool. Let's just keep walking. And we just kept walking. Got a pretzel, kept walking. You'd be amazed what happens sometimes. You can get alone with a child, just do something together, walk. For dad, some of you, and I'm not the fishing kind of father, but some of you are. And I know fathers have had some of the greatest conversations with their kids. Just fishing, going hunting, going snowmobiling, going boating. You know, everything for me has a reason. It's to, whether it's my family, to build my family, to build these relationships, to keep them going. In our family, and again, this is what's odd, and you're going to know this when I say this, I am 20 times more intuitive than my wife. I am the intuitive one in the family. Like, for example, today, I came home, I went out early this morning, got some things for the... Sunday morning I go get bagels at Panera. They have the best cinnamon crunch bagels. If you ever get to go to Panera, try the cinnamon crunch bagel. It's incredible. So every Sunday morning I go get them. So I came home, and Jessie had really wanted to go to church this morning. She'd go every night if she could. So I knew that. Well, she wasn't... When I walked in the door, and Kathy was upstairs, honey, did Jessie go yet? No, she's not going. So I heard her up in the room singing. She sings just about an hour a day. So I knew right away. That's all Kathy said. That's odd. That's odd. So I took my shoes off, put on my slippers, and I went up to her, knocked on the door, and came in. She was singing. She was kneeling down singing, which she doesn't usually do. So I knelt down. I put my arm on her. I said, sweetheart, what's the matter? I thought you were going to go to church. You wanted to go. Which is okay with me, by the way, if she misses. And just like that, tears welled up in her eyes. She said, I'm just having a hard morning, Dad. She didn't tell me why. On this particular morning, I didn't like push it, like, what's going on? I just knew that recently there was a couple relational things that she was dealing with. So I just put my arm around her and said, sweetheart, I love you. You know, this will pass. Just have a good morning, relax in your home. Later on, of course, it did pass, and she was out with some friends, and that's why she didn't come with me tonight. Kathy had no idea anything was wrong. So, and most men, like I said, are not like me. If the wife is that way, what's important is that you then let your husband know what's going on so that he can get involved, or so that you can talk it through and come up with a strategy. You know, usually I'm doing these things on my own. I don't always talk them all through with Kathy, but sometimes I do. Of course, sometimes there's things she knows and she'll say to me. Like one of the things I've been concerned about, I'm just to be very honest with you, is that it's been a real challenge for me balancing. See, I'm involved in a whole other church from half my family. Jeremy, Celeste, and I are at The Rock. Micah, Jesse, and Kathy are at Evergreen. And I don't have time or the energy to go to both. Now, I just got done speaking at both, but to go to, you know, I don't. Then here's the other big deal. I live with three older children, and we're now in that adult world, and it's pretty exciting, and I have a little boy. Well, he's not really a little boy. He's becoming a little man, but he's still a little boy. But sometimes it's more naturally easy for me to spend time with the older ones because I'm at The Rock with them. And I forget, I still got to be a dad to Micah. He's not 18. You know, he's not 16. So you don't tell him this if you talk to him or anything, but he's been talking to me about a guitar. I want to play electric guitar. And I haven't known if he's serious, so I've waited a while for him to keep saying it. So his birthday's coming Wednesday. So today I went out and bought a new Fender Stratocaster. And tonight when I get home, we're going to all give it to him as a family. He didn't know it's coming. And the reason I did it was even if he quits in 2 years, he'll know something I mentioned to Dad that was really important to me was important to Dad, and he tried to make my dream come true. That's the real message. Now, I really believe he'll actually get good at it, but even if he doesn't, I spent the $500. I don't care because I love him. So... You know, I have to constantly work at each relationship with my children and assess where each one is at, what each one's needs are. And Micah's are different than Jesse's, and Jesse's are different than Celeste's. And Celeste is at the point where she needs more freedom. Jesse's more dependent. Celeste is far more independent. And so I have to watch, you know, my boundaries. I got to let you guys go. I'll be back next week, and you young people can bring your questions, and we'll talk next week about anything else.